was this the most your duty was up on the old front line?
Well, I had to go and help the engineers and the you know, there'd be a lot of signals wire line, which okay, we had to pick it up, I suppose. The Americans would just leave it. I mean, everything was salvaged, like, you know, not the British Army, like, you had to salvage it. If there was anything worthwhile bringing out, we had to bring it out. And I think the engineers were there. Well, they were the bosses. They were the ones to say, well, if you pull that plank out, the whole blue lot will drop on you. Do this one first, you know, whatever. And we were just like the labourers. But we, it was like fun, you know. I mean, there we were on top of the trenches where we'd been cowering in them before. And there was all those good sandbags which we'd squared off and made like bricks and all that. We're pulling the bits and emptying them, and not that they're saving us the bags, but it was, you know, a bit lark about that, and also keeping out, you know, keeping away from them, because there was minefields there as well. You see, we had minefields in front of us. I mean, they said there was minefields, I suppose there were, but I question whether there was any mines left in them, because the number of shells that were coming on, you'd think would have set the mines off. But I mean, nobody was prepared to walk through and find out. But they would have to be cleared. I think that's one thing about the British Army. When they lay a minefield, they know the pattern that they're laid in, and they have a good idea where they are, and you can get them up. But there was all those, everything had to be destroyed that could be made like a defence line, you know. And of course the Chinese had to do the same. I mean, at that point wherever we were, the Chinese were kind of where we had to go. But you could see them pulling the stuff out and whatever, but both sides were doing the same.
It must have been quite strange feeling, really.
It was, aye.
One of your field days before.
Oh, you're knocking the hell out of each other.
And
there
you could see them.
And there we are, packing up and going home, aye. And apart from doing that, they decided that we'll have a football field. I tell you, back to peacetime. And so there was these from this flat space, and they all fixed it up with shovels, and we were hacking the like grass or where it was, and you know, going along with just hacking them away and then levelling off. And that's where there were some bloody snakes in there as well. The lads were running around. Anyway, we level it all off, and they've got some poles and got some goal posts up. We had a football field. Then they decided we'd have a cricket pitch. So we made a cricket pitch, and we they picked the, wherever the turf, you know, the, I'm not a cricketer, but wherever, you know, the 22 yards is between the stumps and all that. They picked that, they got that marked out. And then we put field drains in to drain it. Oh, you know, the dig holes and white bricks in and put the soil back on again so it doesn't get boggy. And we did all that. And then there was another place where it was good. It was a bit like an amphitheatre. We had a boxing ring in there, and we had a boxing tournament. You know, you could sit around there on the walls of the side of the hills and that, you know, and the boxing ring was in the middle. And it was just like a bit like an amphitheatre. And then somebody came up with an open air cinema. Everything went to peacetime, you know, as well as the bullshit, like, you know. But in that period of time from, shall we say, August, all August, and we left in September, all August we were busy. The Warwickshire regiment took over from us. They would have nothing to do. We left them with cricket pitches, football pitches, and all the rest.
Were they all built around this camp that you were at?
Was there, aye, within any distance of the camp, aye. And I suppose it would have become a permanent camp after we left. You know, they would get some timber up, or well, it wouldn't be bricks, but they would get timber up and insulate them against the cold, and it would be more permanent. You know what we had, would get some proper beds in, you know, army beds, and it would be all right.
So it was still a tented camp.
Aye, it was the makeshift camp behind.
And this the front line that you were destroying, was that Yongdong, or where had you been there?
No, I hadn't been on where we were destroying it. I mean, it could have been where somebody else had been at another part of the Commonwealth Division, or we were just like giving us the area where you went up and did it, you know.
And you were there what, a month?
Till September. When we left in September.
And what other things were you doing whilst you were there?
Pulling our kit up and I suppose getting ready to move out. You didn't have much time from making football pitches and cricket pitches and a boxing ring and pulling the line to bits and cleaning the weapons and because like everything else, when you're pulling out whatever machinery or whatever weapons you were leaving behind had to be in tip-top or as near tip-top order before the other battalion coming in would accept them. They're not going to accept a load of dirty, broken-down wagons. I mean, okay, I wasn't in the MT, but that type of thing. The wagons would have had to be cleaned, the engines staying clean or whatever, what you do, and in the best mechanical repair that they can get before the other battalion handed over. I mean, Colonel Marini reckons that when we got there, the wagons that we got were a load of crap. They'd already been up and down the country twice. And, you know, it's like everything else. You've got to try and hand it over in the best condition, and the camps have got to be clean, not like the Americans. No litter, everything clean, just ready for somebody to move straight in. And we'll be tidying up. We were kept busy. There's no time to sit with your feet up and rest on your laurels. Air Company, I think it was Air Company, went to, was it a Britannia camp or was it Freedom Village?
Britannia camp, I think.
That's where the prisoners of war were coming back, and Air Company was up there to assist with the prisoners of war coming back. So that meant that we only had three rifle companies where we were. Air Company was up there. And then there was nothing else much happened. That everybody was just over the moon that the war was finished, that we were going home. And we got some, I'd love to say, any better food, but we got some hot food. We had sort of, we weren't going down to a central cookhouse for our meals. Each company had a cookhouse, but just temporary, you know. Somebody who thought he could cook, not an army cook, just somebody who could boil water and boil potatoes and put tinned chicken in a thing. And you went and you lined up with your mess tins and you got your food that way, you got hot food. And that was it. Night time, it was, there wasn't much to do at night time. As I say, we had one open air cinema one night, there was a film on, and there was a nappy, but there was, I can't remember going to a nappy and buying any. In the line we used to put your order in for condensed milk or for soap or for whatever, and it used to, next thing you knew, it was there. But I can't remember going to a nappy on the camp, and obviously there must have been something where you could buy some stuff. Well, that would come up to the company, likely. There'd be, so many men, so many bottles, and that. Don't mind, there's got to be an enough somewhere. I mean, those things, because we were tight. We must have got some beer from somewhere. I know we got bottled beer, and the Americans got tin beer, and they would give anything for the bottled beer. ours was from Japan, and it used to come up with that. You know, sometimes you say, well, you get a bottle, and it's like a little straw cup over it to stop it breaking. I used to come like that with all the straw on them and everything. That's how we used to get the bottles. And we used to, you didn't bother about bottle openers, because that had those clips on the top, and you just used to put it on the side, just the segregated edge on the side of your bed, which is picket, and just dump it like that, and the top would come off, and that was it, no problem. We're good at it.
And you were there till the September?
September, when we left in September.
And where did you move to then?
We moved out to Busan. We, once again, it was night time when we went. The wagons came for us. We, you know, all the day we would have been getting ready, packing your gear, getting everything sorted out. And then the wagons came and took us somewhere, and it must have been the, shall we say, the, what you call the end of the line. Because it wasn't a station, it was just, and there was these carriages waiting for us. And it was dark. And they had a searchlight shining down the, right down the side, so you could see where to step, because to get into the carriage, and there was moths. I've never seen as many moths, and because with the searchlight, it attracted the light, attracted the moths, big ones and little ones, and God, there was thousands of them. And we was just standing waiting, and say, right, oh, you know, you'd all be lined up in front of the carriages that you had to get on, and then right, oh, sort of embark or something. Everybody climbs on. And then after you're on, about 2 hours later or something, an engine might come and hook up, and away you go. And I can't remember much of the journey back down to Busan, but I know they came round with the mayor of Durham had run raffles and wish drives and swimming galas for comforts for us while we were in Korea. And we got some of their food passes to eat on the trip going away. We got some passes while we were there, but like everything else, you don't get everything all at once. And we're getting some of this Mayor of Durham's comfort parcels, and we had them to eat on the way back. And we went down to Busan, and we went to a transit camp. Now, I can remember very little of this transit camp. People were saying there was WVS women there, and there was nothing. All I can remember about Busan is we went to the cemetery, the United Nations cemetery, and we had a service there. And each DLI grave had a green sash over, so you didn't have to look round all of them, you just looked for a green sash. Then we went and looked for the lads who I only knew Peter Million. I went and had a look at his grave, and of course, all the other lads were looking for that. Then we came away from there, obviously back to the transit camp. And then the next thing is, I remember getting on there. I'm not sure whether it was the Empire Fowey or the Empire Orwell, the troop ship. And it was pouring down with rain, and we're out ponchos on, and we're soaking wet, going up. But it didn't matter how going on. Why? Going to Egypt. And got onto the boat, and then you were guided down onto whichever deck you were. Just about 2 days, 3 days or so, not weeks. You see, because there would be people coming out, there would be America. See, Busan was the only port for the whole of South Korea, really. Incheon, I think, but it was subject to very high and low tides. And when it was said, when MacArthur went in, they landed in Incheon, they were a bit worried about they'd have to land some troops, and it might be 12 hours before they could get somebody else in. And so I don't think it was much of a port for handling stuff. Whereas Busan, it was the main port, and you know, ships could come in and out all day, and you know. And so when a troop ship pulled up, obviously it was get loaded up and away, ready for another one coming in, maybe bringing supply. As I say, the Warwicks were coming in to relieve us, and it seems as though September to, I don't know, August, maybe from August to November was the time when the battalions changed over. And so we were due to go out in September. There was people due to come in September. And it would all, I mean, you've got to reckon there's a hell of an organisation to get all everybody in out and to get national servicemen coming home for the mob and people to go out and replace them and to keep battalions up to strength. And it was kind of, you know, a hell of an organisation to go into it. And so we didn't have to, I can't even remember what sort of a band played us out. I can't remember. There's just one of those places where I remember going to the cemetery and I remember getting on the boat and it was pouring down with rain. And that was it.
Because you hadn't spent any time in there when you arrived?
No, you just arrived then straight up. I can't even remember how long we were on the train. I know it was a bloody long time. But because they only had about two or three railway lines up in the country, you know. And they don't go through the hills, they go around them. They don't go up. I mean, okay, a train doesn't go up and over unless it's one of these mountain trains, but they don't even go up, seem to go up gradients. They just stayed on the bottom and they went right round. Took bloody ages, aye.
Your troop ship, did you know where you were going to at that time?
We knew we were going to Egypt. Actually, I knew we were going to Egypt before I got to Korea. Because when we were going through the training, they said, right, you're going out, you've got the 1st Battalion. You'll do a year, well, the battalion do a year in Korea. Then they're coming back to the Canal Zone to go into some brigade. And they said the actual place for the brigade was Tripoli. We should have been going to Tripoli. But the brigade had been moved in the Canal Zone, so we were going to the Canal Zone. So we knew we weren't coming home, you know. But it was a bit rough, like, after coming out of Korea. I think a lot of the lads, the regulars, might thought, well, I would be going home after this lot, you know. But they didn't, they just dropped us off in...
the whole battalion went to Egypt.
Egypt, huh? Yeah.
How long did you have to do at that time?
Why, from September when we left, I had to go to June. About 8 months, 10 months.
Did anybody go home then?
Aye, some lads stayed on and went home. Aye, lads who were due for the mob, national servicemen, or like Colonel Barini. He went straight home. He claimed his Python right, was it? You wait for 3 years, they've got to bring you home. Well, he'd been in the African Rifles or something, and he'd done time. And he didn't want to go to the Canal Zone, so he says, right, I want to come for you.
You've never had any leave, have you?
No leave. They owe me some money. And travel warrants, they owe me some money. Should be a bit now, there's been interest on it. But we had quite an eventful journey coming back to Egypt.
I was just going to ask you about your journey.
It was about... Depending on the ships, 4 or 5 days from Busan to Hong Kong, I think. That was the first stop, Hong Kong. And the boat pulled in, and it was like, it's like a pier that comes out, or jetty, it's a jetty. And the boat sort of pulls in, and there was the Royal Ulster Rifle Band on the quayside playing us in, and there was an American cruise ship on the other side of the jetty. And they're all there with the cameras, you know. And then, because we were all smartened up to go, spit and polish again. I don't know how we managed it, but we got smart. Before you went to shore, the RSN, they all inspected you. You just didn't say, we're all inspected. We're down the gangway. And they went into Kowloon. It was Kowloon where the boat stopped, not Hong Kong. And, I'd been there before, you see. So we got the Star Ferry across to Hong Kong. And, I think we had about 6 hours. We back. And you know, 6 hours up, and there's about 300 missed, I think. A hell of a lot missed. I say 300, maybe it's not many. Maybe it's not that many. But apparently word went out to the MPs in Hong Kong and everybody. Get around, pick them up. Well, the first place I went was the brothels. And there was Land Rovers coming in with them. Some of them had no shirts on. So they were tight and they were getting thrown in, you know, dragging away all these Americans were taking photos of them coming back. They were all tight. And there were some lads got back on and then they jumped off the boat at the other side into the harbour and swimming away to try and get back. There was another one started climbing down the rope that tied the boat to the jetty. And there was an MP at the bottom and there was an MP at the top and he's stuck there. Oh, there was hell on. Anyway, the boat pulled out. We left three, I think. We left three in Hong Kong. And the boat pulled out. And the next day, we'd say, the CEO got everybody to give us such a bollocking. Disgrace to the regiment, you know, all that. And shame of yourselves. And I'm going to stop. You sure leave in Singapore, but he says that I will be punishing a lot of you for a few, so I'm not going to stop it, but I hope you're on the best behaviour. We've got to Singapore to see if anything happens. There was hell on, they were dragging them back, and they were tight, and well, I mean, some of the lads haven't really been in civilization for a year, you know, I mean, apart from 5 days in Tokyo, they've been living rough, and hadn't seen, you know, and they were just making most of it.
It's been a war for a year.
You know, and they were coming back, and MPs were out again, dragging them back. And on this, when we're in Hong Kong, they'd sort of opened a hole up in the bottom of the ship where you could walk in, you know. We're in Singapore, you had to go up the steps. There was some of them hanging on to the canopy right the side, and they wouldn't leave going. They were, oh, there was hell on. And then another telling off when the ship pulled out. And anyway, by the time we got to Aden, nobody had any money left. And Colombo, I went to Colombo, and the boat doesn't tie it, but Colombo, you have to go ashore and went for little boats, you know. But it was pretty quiet that Colombo and Aden, no money left.
And we stopped at Colombo and Aden.
Aye. And then we.
Well, they just shore leaves again.
Oh, just 6 hours, you know. You see, the boat was. How can I put it? I don't know whether it took fuel on, or possibly take fresh water on. But also, they were carrying the mail for to and from, you know, they were. The journey was the UK out to Japan or whatever. And so they would carry mail out, they would carry mail back. Maybe ammunition and what have you. On the way out and coming back, just troops, I think. I don't know. I tell you, I was on the boat with us when we came back. The CEO of the Gloucesters. Cairns, is it? Colonel Cairns, he got the VC. He was on the boat.
Were there any other who else was on the boat? Italians or?
Well, it's just us. We were the main ones that was taking us. I mean, when you reckon 800-900 blokes, like, you know, it's nearly the complement that the ship can take. But there were some prisoners of war on with us, and Colonel Cairns, he was. We had to do guards on the ship as well, you know. Everything had to be guarded. And we had there was a little hospital on the ship. And there was some loonies. And I remember I had to do, once again, on guard, you know, guard commander. To the hospital, So you had this ward. This didn't happen when I was there. You had the ward with all the skivers in. You know, bad backs and all skiving to get off this. And one of these loonies, well, they weren't loonies. They were talking quite the same way we were talking, but there was something had happened. You know,
they were
soldiers.
Aye,
soldiers, aye. And one of these got out. When I say got out, he just walked away. And he got some knives and he started throwing the knives around in the ward. And all these blokes with bad backs off the bed and they were up on the top deck. They'd never seen as many people get a cure. They reckon they were running out all over the place and the MO was, my God. Anyway, all that got sorted out. And then I had to do this, get at these people. And you'd be sitting with them in like a little cafe place, you know, tables where you get your meal and that. And these lads would be sitting talking to you and playing cards with you, dominoes, pass the time of day. But you hadn't to let them have, if they wanted to go to the toilet, you'd say what you're going to do, you know, you've got no razor blades at all. And you had to not let them have any knives, so you just had to watch them. And they say, I think we're crackers, you know. Say, all right. Says, well, when you get off the ship, the customs are going to go through your baggage like now, don't they? Says, we're going to go off on a stretcher. And we'll have all what we want on the stretcher. That's a daft like.
do you know where they came from?
Like different regiments, different service corps blokes, engineers, you know, there was no Durhams in among them.
Hospitalised,
aye. There was one bloke, he was kept in a padded cell and he was drugged all the time. It was the first time I was saying a padded cell. And it was all padded and there was a light sunk into the top where he couldn't reach it. And there was a look in through the door and the sick bay attendants, for want of a better word, they used to go in and used to keep him drugged. And they took him off at Colombo. I think it was Colombo. And he went off in it. I don't know. It was like he was lying like a mummy. He was straight, and it was like this bamboo thing was wrapped around him. I suppose it was so he wouldn't fall out of the sling when they lowered him down onto a boat, and well, they were taking him to a mental hospital. Or whatever, before they brought him back to the UK, or I don't know, but he lay in this padded cell, drugged up the eyeballs, and we never went in. It was always two medical orderlies went in, and they always went in a bit wary, you know, he maybe's coming out of the drugs that they had, they'd be wearing off, and they would go in and give him a job or something, or put some food in, or very, very rarely, we never went in. Guards. Cleaning it, sweeping the decks and fire picket. They organised a sort of an intercompany sports, tug of war, running, high jumps, you know, as much as you can on a ship when it's bloody going along. And just like carnival, just a bit of relaxation, you know.
What were conditions like on the ship?
They're all right, like any troop ship. I mean, I've been on one, two, three troop ships and a junk ship from Japan, and all of a similar.
Pretty much the same.
What I went out on the Fowey. It was the Fowey and the Orwell were nearly sister ships for layout and that. The Asturias that I went out on was, somebody said, an immigrant ship commandeered by the Ministry of Defence, but the Fowey and the Orwell were proper troop ships. They were white and had a blue band right round. That's how you could tell a troop ship, and they were designed for troops. And on there we had, for your food, you had these trays with a indentations in where you put potato and your veg and that. And we had different lunch times, obviously, because the I'll call it the canteen or the dining room couldn't hold everybody at the same time. So I'm not sure whether it was three or four meal times. You had a colour, you know, red, blue or green or something, and it would come over the tannoy. Breakfast for green card holders or whatever. You know, sometimes when you go to the baths, you get a green band or a red band and your time's up, sort of. And it would come over the tannoy that meal time would go for whatever colour